Hello and welcome to Down and Dirty with Darcy. I'm your host, Darcy Smith, also known as Career Coach Darcy. We are here to get down and dirty about careers, uncovering salaries, wild stories, backgrounds, and more from guests with some of the most eccentric professions each week. This podcast is presented by Onomy. Welcome back to Down and Dirty with Darcy. I am Darcy, better known as Career Coach Darcy. I am so excited to get into the interview today with Michaela. She is, number one, amazing, but I love how she just moved out to LA and was like, that sounds more fun than where I'm at, so I'm going to go do that. And she did. She has an Instagram and TikTok called Break Your Budget, and she talks all about personal finance. And what I loved about our interview is that she really goes into like actionable steps. And even better, she also talks about what she made out of college and what she was making in her jobs, and then now what she's made as a content creator. So some really good stuff. So let's get into it.
But I was like, what's the potential for me to earn with my business, which was higher than that.
Right.
And if I were to stay in my current role, like how long would it take for me to get promoted? And what would the salary be? And so I was looking at it from a couple of different angles. Ultimately, the best decision at that point was for me to take the chance on myself.
Hey, Michaela, thanks so much for coming on Down and Dirty with Darcy. I'm so happy to have you. I'm going to start off by just letting you introduce yourself and give us a little rundown of your background.
Cool. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
I'm Michaela. I am a content creator, entrepreneur, and author, building a platform to help millennials and Gen Z learn more about personal finance.
Nice. That's amazing. How did you get started doing content creation, and when did you get started?
Yeah. So it's been a long journey, I will say. I actually started Break Your Budget back in 2019 on Instagram. And originally the idea sort of came from sharing what I was doing with my money as I was like navigating the post-grad corporate lifestyle, making a full-time salary, but not really knowing what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also found that a lot of my friends and peers would come to me for like budgeting advice or personal finance advice because I worked in the industry. So I was learning a lot about it at work. And I realized there's kind of a gap with a lot of young professionals not really understanding how to use their money, what to use it for, that's sort of leading to this whole issue later on in life of not being able to afford all of the things that, you know, you want to do. So
right.
That's really where the idea came to be. And then over the last couple of years, it's sort of morphed and turned into, you know, so much more than that. So
yeah. What's the meaning of Break Your Budget?
So that's a good question. There kind of isn't really like, or when I came up with the name, it was one of those things that just came to me, right? And I'm like, okay, this sounds great.
It does, yeah.
But I feel like it's sort of grown into meaning something. Like a lot of people think Break Your Budget means that you're physically like breaking your budget and not following a budget. But yeah. To me, it's really building a budget and breaking the mold of what a budget is interpreted as and really turning it into like a lifestyle or a spending mm-hmm. plan or something that gives you opportunity as opposed to restricting you. So
right.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it kind of caught my eye because personally, I'm not someone that creates and sticks to a budget. It's
yeah.
just never been my style.
Mm-hmm.
I have a different style when I manage my money. And part of that was growing up with a father that really instilled in me,
yeah.
hey, like make sure that you don't just get a credit card and start spending on it. You have to make sure mm-hmm. you can afford everything you're paying for. So when I got my first credit card, what I did was I paid it off every single Friday, no matter what. So I wasn't using anything that wasn't in my bank account.
Yeah.
And I still practice that to this day. And so I'm never like backlogged on having that credit, mm-hmm. you know, just that keeps going. And so for me, that's kind of like my own way of budgeting.
Yeah.
So I know what I'm spending and what I have. But so when I saw Break Your Budget, I was like, oh, okay. It's kind of like a play on words or spin
yeah.
on it. But what do you talk about when you talk about budgets? And
yeah.
it's always a huge part of personal finance.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I have a specific strategy that I always tell people to follow from the beginning. And, you know, it can morph into as much or as little as you want. But the strategy that I really instill is to follow a zero-based three-bucket budget. And I say that for a few reasons. So first, I'll say what that
yeah.
means. It's a lot of words. A zero-based three-bucket budget has two elements. So zero-based means that every dollar of income you earn is used for something, whether that be an expense or a financial goal. The three bucket element breaks it down into tangible areas that you would most commonly be spending or using your money for. So your essential expenses, which is your baseline. So that's how you understand what you're spending every month on, you know, your cost to exist, your living expenses, transportation, food, things like that. Then we have your financial goals, which come right after your essential expenses, before your non-essential expenses, which would be the third bucket. The reason why they go in that specific order is because if you have financial goals that you are working towards, whether they're clearly defined or not, because that's something that I think a lot of people struggle with is, well, I want to save money, but I don't necessarily have anything in particular I'm saving for. That's okay. You can save for nothing. You'll need that money eventually. The reason why those go second is because they have to be prioritized in your overall approach to your finances. A lot of people struggle to save because they treat their savings as whatever's left over after all of their expenses, essential or non-essential. And that is a backwards way to think about reaching any type of financial goal. So financial goals come second. And then non-essential expenses are the last bucket here that I say to focus on and to figure out the optimal amount for your non-essentials. You're taking your income, subtracting what you spend on your baseline essential expenses, subtracting what you would ideally be putting towards your various financial goals, and then whatever's left over is your non-essentials. And from there, if that's a number you're uncomfortable with, whether it be way more than you need or way less than what you need to like enjoy and live your life, that's when you start to adjust to find like what is the optimal allocation of my income for me to reach my goals and find that balance of living my life. And that sort of serves as the framework for people to just get started and understand where their money is going, because that I think is one of the biggest barriers that a lot of young adults face is they just don't really know how they're spending their money. They say, okay, well, I can afford to pay my bills. You know, I can afford to make my rent every month. And if I can throw $100 extra into my savings account, you know, we're doing okay.
Cool. Right.
But it's so much more than that. And you can't really figure out the direction you want to go in or what changes you need to make if you have no idea where things are going. So with that strategy, you know, up front, you're putting a little more time and effort into understanding where things are going.
Mm-hmm.
But once you have a good grip on it, you don't need to be as rigid or as involved. It doesn't need to go as deep. You can just have your three buckets. You know, okay, I spend $2,000 a month on my essentials. My goal is to save or invest or pay off debt with $500. And then I've got another $500 for all the stuff I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, you have at least a framework to follow. You have guidelines so you can keep things in control.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. I love putting formulas to things because it helps my brain actually put it together in a better piece. So the way that you explain that, I think, is super helpful. And I'm curious just in terms of how you got into this life and lifestyle. You were saying that it comes from your background in corporate.
Mm-hmm.
So take us back kind of to the beginning, like where you grew up, where you went to school, and then how you got into the financial space to begin with.
Sure. So growing up, I grew up in the greater Boston area. So the North Shore of Boston, if anybody listening is from Boston. And I went to school at Elon University down in North Carolina. And then I moved back to Boston for a couple of years pre-pandemic and was working and living in the city, working in the finance industry. So I spent about 3 years working in like investment research and investment consulting, which is where I actually learned the most about finances and investing in the stock market and like how to actually apply that information to your life.
Yeah.
And in those settings, you know, I was working obviously in a corporate environment. So, you know, the clients that we worked with weren't individuals, but the concepts are the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's when I learned and realized that there's such a knowledge gap with young adults and, you know, full blown adults, like aged people who just have no idea how to invest their money, how to use their money in an optimal way. And so that's where the wheels started to turn a little bit. And then, you know, after a couple of years working in that environment, I was just over it and ready for a change. And so I pivoted into a corporate finance FP&A style role. So FP&A is financial planning and analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I learned more of the tactical strategies for actually planning your finances and thinking about how everything works together.
Okay.
And I think those two different experiences where I was learning in a corporate setting gave me what I needed to apply it to my personal situation and systematize it almost to help other people learn how to actually do these things in like a tangible and actionable way.
Okay.
Which is another gap that I find with a lot of, you know, just personal finance information online is it's not actionable, it's not tangible, and it's not relatable for most people. So you can sit on the internet and learn about what the stock market means, but that doesn't help you actually do anything.
I feel like it's overwhelming too.
Mm-hmm.
Like the amount of information is out there, but it's the where do I start? What can I do to actually make a step towards helping myself?
Yeah.
And that's where.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful for social media because I feel like it's brought an easier way for people to understand things and consume a content that is very educational and very helpful. So
And you can choose and pick and choose like what you consume and who you learn from, which I think is really important. Like I think something that's even helped me establish myself in this space as like a finance creator is that I actually have a background in it. And it's not to say you need to have a formal training or anything to learn about personal finance, but you know, it is important when you are trying to manage your money to be getting that information from people who know what they're saying and have experience. And so I'm really grateful. I didn't love working my corporate job. I struggled a lot, which we can talk about, but I'm grateful for that experience just because I don't think that I would be able to even have break your budget if I never had that. The idea would have never even
came
to
be. Let's dive into the corporate side a little bit because a lot of people that listen work in corporate or work in that lifestyle, and I always like to open up the salary transparency talk. So if you're open to it, I'd love to hear kind of your trajectory of what you were making in those corporate settings and like what those roles were, how many hours you were working. I bet you it was a lot.
So my first job out of college, I was working at a pretty big insurance firm in Boston. And I was in their investment group. I was actually in a rotational program. So my starting salary there was $62,000. And that was in 2017.
Okay.
So that was pretty good.
That is good.
For that period of time. I feel like today the starting salaries for a lot of finance jobs are like 90 to 100K, which is insane to me. But it's, you know, the world we live in.
Depends on where you live too, for sure.
And so at that job, it actually wasn't like a super, super time intensive role. I was really lucky. So I was working, you know, typical about 40 hours a week. And I was in that role for just under 2 years. Then I transferred into, or I got a new job in investment consulting, which was a client facing role. That was my first experience working with clients. I don't like working with clients. I learned a lot about myself during that experience. I lasted only a year before I was like, I cannot do this. And for that role, I actually took a small pay cut. I took a, I think I left my first job with like raises and stuff. I was making maybe like 65, 66K at that point. And I also got a bonus. I got 10%, assuming the company did well and everything. In my job that I moved into, the consulting role, I was making 60K, but they offered me a 10% bonus. And I told them like, well, this is less money than, you know, what I'm making in my current job. Can you guarantee the bonus? And they did that. So
smart.
I equated it at 66K. And the reason why I did that and took the like took the pay cut was for the experience. And I didn't know when I took that job that I was going to hate it. I didn't know what I was in for. And I think that was kind of the beauty of it at the same time, because I learned, I think that 1 year that I worked that job, yes, I was making less money, but I learned more in that one role than I did in both of my other two jobs combined, because I had a lot of responsibility. It was very hands-on. I was working with clients, so I was exercising a muscle I never really had to exercise from a corporate setting. And, you know, I learned how to deal with a lot of different types of personalities. I learned a lot about corporate hierarchy. I did a lot of networking. So that job, because it was a consulting, like, client-based role, we did have to go to after-work events. And, like, I just had to learn how to operate in that,
that
setting
world.
And be confident.
And how old were you at the time that you had this role? About
24.
Oh my goodness.
23 into 24. Yeah.
That's young.
Because I'm young for my grade.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I graduated college, I was still 21.
Yep.
So by the time I got into this job, I think I was turning 24 the summer after I got this role.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the pandemic happened. That's when I turned 25, and then I turned 26. And then all of a sudden, you know, a couple of years later, I'm out here. But right before the pandemic is when I pivoted again. And that's where I went to my last job, the corporate finance FP&A role. That was like a strict financial analyst role.
Okay.
And at that job, I took a big bump. They offered me, my starting salary was $85,000. And then my bonus, I think, was also up to 10%.
Nice.
So that was a big jump for me, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I left that job, I was making about $90,000. And I actually, before I left, I was trying to figure out, like, okay, am I going to leave and do Break Your Budget? And like, or am I going to find another job? I had actually interviewed for two other jobs, both at which the salary was $120,000. And that was in LA. Which I was happy with that number, but I was like, what's the potential for me to earn with my business, which was higher than that.
Right.
And if I were to stay in my current role, like how long would it take for me to get promoted and what would the salary be? And so I was looking at it from a couple of different angles. And yeah, I mean, ultimately the best decision at that point was for me to take the chance on myself. And, you know, here we are.
That's amazing.
A year later, and it's all worked out very nicely.
It's all worked out. And now you're an author.
Yes.
Which is,
yes,
what's
I'm
the
coming
name of
out
the book?
With my new book, Own Your Money. I actually have a copy.
Oh, yeah. Show it to the camera.
We will.
That's so exciting.
Yes. very, very excited about this. This is a big career accomplishment for me. It comes out June 20th. So I'm very excited. And yeah, basically, my book goes into everything that I learned, my career journey in a very candid way, and tactical tips because finance books are very dry. So my book has like illustrations and charts and stuff to make it a little more interesting. But it has tips and like implementable, actionable steps, which I've read a lot of finance books. And a lot of them are just full of information.
Yeah.
And not here's what you actually need to do. So
right. And it's like I can learn. When am I going to actually take the step to
like,
do something about
exactly.
it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can't do anything with all of the knowledge if you don't know how to apply it.
Implement
so that's the goal, really,
yeah.
of the book is to make that information available on a wide scale at a, you know, the price of a book.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then with Break Your Budget, what's your monetization? Like how much money are you making from what you're doing, what you're providing, and what is that? And then how much, like I'm assuming you're doing brand deals, like kind of talk us through what that looks like.
Yeah, so the monetization journey of Break Your Budget has been interesting. Originally, when I started Break Your Budget as a whole, I was working one-on-one doing like budgeting consults, and I had like a program where you could work with me for 3 months. And I wasn't making a ton of money doing that. Like I wasn't making any money I could actually use, you know? Mm-hmm. And I also realized like, I don't really love doing that. It's a lot of time and the ROI there just wasn't worth it.
Right.
And so as I started growing a little bit, posting on TikTok, you know, brands started to approach me. So I started to do some brand deals, which are a great way to make money on social media for sure. And then I came out with some digital products and stuff. So something that I struggled with on my own journey was finding a tool that really worked for me and worked the way my brain works. And the apps just never really hit for me. Like I didn't like getting the notifications. I didn't like that I couldn't be as hands-on. I'm a very hands-on visual kind of person. And I think when it comes to your money, you do need to be involved. And so that's when I came out with a budgeting template that I had built for myself and was like showing on my socials. And everybody was like, what is this template you're using? Like, where can I get it? And so I basically packaged it up.
Yeah.
And that was 2 years ago this summer is when I started. It's called the Personal Finance Dashboard. So that was the beginning of where I actually started making real money from my own business. And it was the catalyst to creating essentially like a suite of digital templates for personal finance, career, side hustle. I have a side hustle template. I have a career template.
Nice.
I have a budgeting template for your personal finances. I have a couple of courses to just help answer a lot of the questions that I would get over and over and over again when I was doing one-on-one clients.
Yeah.
So that I would say at this point in time now makes up about 60% of my business revenue, which is awesome. And I do all of my advertising and everything just through my organic
socials. Mm-hmm.
And then I would say about 40% of my revenue comes through for brand deals. And I've got a handful of things cooking, you know, with my book and stuff. So I'm hoping to add in maybe a third and a fourth revenue stream this year. It's all in the works. But those two avenues have worked really well for me for a couple of years now, and they don't really show any signs of slowing down. So
nice. And I love talking about brand deals and stuff. I find it kind of the world of social media fascinating.
Yeah.
Can you share with us like what the most you've ever made on a like a TikTok post or something like that?
Yeah. So I have like a recurring deal that's fairly lucrative. And I would say the one or the rate that I get paid per video on that is like $9,000.
That's amazing.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
But that's the highest. I would say that's the highest for like a single video.
Mm-hmm.
I often will do like packages of videos, and those will be also like in the 9 to 10K range for a handful of them, depending on. There's so many factors that impact that, right? Because
they have usage, you know, and they like, can promote it.
They're paying
sponsor.
For the work. They're paying for the ad space on my channel, but then they're also paying to use my image, which is where you can really jack up the price because, you know, you have rights to my face, my brand. Somebody sees me, they associate that product with my brand. So it can impact credibility. So that's really, I would say, where the money comes from on those deals.
And the space that we're in, like we have to support brands that we also agree with, which I think is important because we can't say yes to everything. Because if we can't support it from a, for me as a career coach, I'm not going to support a resume service that I wholeheartedly don't believe in just because they're paying me a bunch of money. So whereas maybe someone in a lifestyle brand, they can throw on some clothes and be like, you know, it's close.
Yeah.
So
yeah. And the same goes with finance. Like there are so many different apps that exist out there. There's so many different services. And, you know, I always say my approach to brand deals is I won't work with a brand whose product I don't stand behind. But as a finance creator, people come to me for recommendations. So even if the app or the product isn't something that I need in my phase of where I'm at with my financial journey, if it's a product that I feel would be valuable to my audience, then I'll do it.
Right.
And, you know, I think from an outsider perspective or people not in this space, like they think that a creator working with a brand, like they're just looking for quick money. I think that it's unknown to the wider audience, like how much money as creators we turn down. But also like a sponsored post basically pays for all of the non-sponsored posts that I do.
Exactly.
So like, sure, the rate is high, but at the same time, if you were to divide that by the amount of content I put out that's free on a per video basis, it's kind of not. Like,
I think in the beginning of social media, everyone was shocked by the amount of money people were making.
Yeah.
And now I think people understand how much work truly goes into it.
Yeah.
Because I think I heard so many times it was like, oh, she just puts on clothes or she just talks about this tool and makes a bunch of money. It's like, it's not quite like that.
No.
But also, I mean, a brand could pay thousands and thousands of dollars for a commercial or they could pay a creator like us and it is a commercial. You know, it's like kind of the same
thing. And the likelihood that the reach is higher is significant, like higher reach, more engagement. Like it just from a business standpoint, it definitely makes a lot of sense. And I've learned a lot about that over the last couple of years, because when I was working my corporate job, the last one, so I was a financial analyst, but the section of the P&L that I was managing was the brand section. So I was involved in a lot of the ways that the brands were deciding how to use their different budgets. And should we go the influencer route or should we make a commercial? To make a commercial or to do like some sort of celebrity endorsement is between, take the celebrity out of it, what you're paying them, which is, you know, $1 million. Hiring an agency, the production cost is, it's unbelievable. Like you have no idea how much money these brands are spending, especially big brands. The company I worked at was Boston Beer Company. So they were Sam Adams, Twisted Tea, Truly, like these huge, huge brands with big budgets. Like it's so much money that they could pay an influencer 10 grand. You know, that's a lot of money for an individual who can post a TikTok and get a million views.
A lot of reach, yeah.
And, you know, that the ROI on that is so much higher than spending $300,000 a month for an agency who is going to make you a 15-second clip of a, I don't know, an alcoholic product that like nobody cares
can
about.
Relate to,
yeah, like it's
like they can an influencer.
It's just so
Twisted,
different.
They did a great job because I love the Twisted Tea. They find like the funniest influencers, yeah. And they have that one, Becky Robinson. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know who that is, but she does like the golf things, and yeah. She like always does her Twisted Tea. I'm like, do I need Twisted Tea to have that much fun?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, when you work with like a cool brand like that, they have so much artistic freedom. Mm-hmm. But it's Definitely. A lot of money goes into doing that.
Okay, so now I want to ask you something. So you're from the East Coast and you moved out to LA. What's like the best thing that you've like done now that you've been out in LA? What do you like about living here? Do you see yourself here long term?
So this is a hot take, but I love LA.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people hate LA. I think if you hate LA, you're doing LA wrong.
Agreed.
The city has so much to offer. For me, so the lifestyle, the East Coast versus West Coast lifestyle, they're just so vastly different. Like when I think about what I would do in Boston on the weekends, like the culture in the city revolves around drinking and bars and all of that. Where LA, obviously that exists if you want it, but it doesn't, it's not the only option.
Yeah.
Because the city is so big, you know, the geography of the area is so unique. Mm-hmm. So I think my favorite part of LA, aside from the weather when it's cooperating, which this year it hasn't been.
Yeah.
Is just access to like being able to hike, being able to go to the beach. Like literally my favorite thing to do is I drive a Jeep so I can take the top off.
Nice.
I like to take the top off and drive up the PCH and go on a hike, which is free. My favorite budget activity is hiking.
Can I just call you out real fast? I can tell you're not from LA because you say the PCH. I always call my friends out for that because we like when we're here, we say PCH.
So you would say drive up PCH.
Yep. Yeah, it's not grammatically correct, but that's just what people say.
See, the thing is like being in LA, people say the 405.
Yeah.
Where on the East Coast, they would just say 405.
Right. We're opposite.
Yeah, that's so weird.
But it's just PCH. Yeah. Not,
okay. Well, so I drive
now
up.
Now you know.
I drive up PCH.
There you go.
And I like to hike. I have a couple of hikes in Malibu that I like. And then grabbing lunch, maybe sitting on the beach. Like,
so fun.
It's so easy, and it's just like the nicest way to spend your time.
My favorite thing is it is a very laid back lifestyle, but then everyone has this hustle about them where they're trying to make it or they're trying to do something, that you feel that presence when you're here. And so when I left here, I moved away about a year ago, and every time I'm back, because I'm here once a month to do the podcasting, I just get this like injection of I don't know, just excitement. And I love LA, so I'm on that side of the coin. But
LA just has so much opportunity. Like I don't think that I would have ever been able to find the success I have if I wasn't living here. And I didn't move to LA to like be an influencer or something. Like I don't even really consider myself that anyways.
Right.
But you know, the opportunity that exists here just in terms of networking and access to events and like just anything really
is all here.
If I was living in Boston, like I would not be sitting in this chair right now. I wouldn't be able to participate in things like this because you know, logistically it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, of course.
So
okay, so now we have to do the thing where you tell everyone where to find you,
okay,
where to get your book and all that fun stuff. So give us the rundown.
So you can find me anywhere on socials. I have the same username, just at Break Your Budget. You can go to my website, breakyourbudget.com. I have a bunch of free downloads. That's where you can find all of my templates and everything. And then you can order my book. I don't know when this is coming out. If it's coming out before June 20th, you can pre-order my book at breakyourbudget.com/book. And if it's coming out after June 20th, you can buy my book at breakyourbudget.com/book.
I love this so much. Yeah, pre-order if this is out before, because those are so important for authors. So congratulations on all your success.
Thank you so much. Writing
a book is not easy.
Yeah.
I tell everyone, I wrote a chapter of a book and it was the hardest thing I've ever done. So very, very hard. But thank you so much for coming on. And it was great to chat. Yeah.
Thank you so much. This was great.
Yeah. Bye. Okay, how much fun was Michaela? That was amazing. I love that you were there too.
I was in the background of that interview, and every time Michaela talks, I just learn something new because the way that she says things is so cohesive and very, I don't know, like,
it's like put together
in a way that I haven't heard other people talk. And I always get motivated to do my finances and then I never do it, but at least the motivation is there briefly. So hopefully everyone else feels that way.
Yeah. When she was talking, I felt myself just like intently listening as I'm interviewing her, because usually I'm really nervous and needing to come up with my next question. And sometimes I found myself like not ready for my next question because I was so intently listening as to what she was saying, because she definitely has, for lack of a better term, her shit together, and she knows what she's talking about. And I'm stoked to read her book. I already started opening it up last night, so I'm excited to read it. It'll be good for me for sure.
Yeah, I literally have been reading it already, and I love all the charts and pictures in there because it is like a finance book that is so much more approachable. So I really appreciate that. And you're going to go on her podcast too, right?
Yeah, I am. I think I'm going to be on it in the next like week or two. So check me out over there for sure. So much of my voice, which sounds like it's going away, by the way. It could be because of this last weekend, which I can definitely get into. I feel like I had so many people DMing me because I went to Schwartz and Sandy's. And oh my gosh, hot topic, because tonight is the VPR, the Vanderpump Rules finale. I'm so excited. Do you watch or not? You just know about it?
I did watch the first couple seasons, and now I just obviously keep up with the drama. So
yeah, that's all you need. Honestly, you could watch like 3 TikToks and be caught up.
That's what I do, actually. That is exactly what I do.
People do such a good job. But yeah, I was with some friends. It's really cool because my two friends that I went out with, Blake and Laura, they both are from like work. So my first work bestie that I ever met as my first job out of college was Cintas. And that's how I met Laura. And we've stayed like literally best friends ever since. And then Blake was a trauma bond because we both worked at a company thou shalt not name. That I was not a fan of.
I remember you guys talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah, she's a matchmaker now. So she was on the podcast and her podcast episode was so great, but she's an amazing friend. And yeah, definitely a trauma bond from that experience. But yeah, we still hang out and it's great. So we went out all together, and I was excited to tell you about this because it's a travel story. So we were out pretty much all night, and I got back from being out around like 3:30. And so I had my flight at 8:30 in the morning. And I was like, well, what do I do? Do I just go to the flight or do I stay home, sleep for a couple hours and then get an Uber? So my mind, Darcy's mind, was like, I'm just gonna go to the airport now and then I'll figure it out once I get there because it just makes more sense. I think I'm gonna sleep in if I go into a bed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I'll just go. So I get there 4 hours before my flight. And you can't go into the Delta. This is like for so stupid, but you can't go into the Delta Sky Lounge unless it's 3 hours in advance. So they wouldn't let me in. And I was like, oh man. And I was like, the hangover's kind of setting in. And I was like, dang. And so then I look at my phone and out of nowhere, it was like, your flight's been canceled. My 8:30 flight was canceled. And they're like, don't worry, we rebooked you on the next best flight. And I was like, are you kidding me? I'm going to be here all day. Turns out they booked me for a 6 a.m. flight. Which, like,
you would have been so screwed.
That's what I'm saying.
The fact that you knew, like, had an inkling to go to the airport, Darcy, that is weird.
Isn't that weird? Like, the universe literally had my back. I was like, wait. So you're telling me I can not only now get into the Delta Sky Lounge, have my eggs, and be happy, and also I'm gonna be on the flight that gets out earlier. Like, this is amazing. So then I'm like, this is the best day of my life. So I'm like, I'm going to keep this positivity train just rolling, right? Like, something good's happening. So I'm going to keep it going. So it gets better. I was on my 8:30 flight on Comfort Plus. And so when I got switched to the 6 a.m., they're like, you're in the back of the plane. And so I was like, whatever, at least I have a flight. So then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try it. So I go, when we're boarding, I go up to the person that's at the front service desk and I was like, hi, how's your day? Like, just really laying it on thick of just like being extra nice. And she was like, oh, I'm doing great. Like, how are you? And then we're just like going back and forth, you know, talking. And then I was like, so I was actually, my original flight was canceled and I was on Comfort Plus. Like, is there any way there's any openings in Comfort Plus on this plane? She was like, honestly, no, it's like completely sold out. And like, we definitely don't have anything in Comfort Plus. And she's like, but you know what? I just love your energy. And I think I just want to do you a, she literally said these words. I just want to do you a solid. So I'm going to put you in first class.
What? Like, yeah. Wait, Oh my God. I know. Your luck was, wow, wait. Yeah. Okay, this is a lesson. I always tell people to be so nice to the airport staff. One, because they deal with assholes mm-hmm. all fucking day. And if you're that nice person, dude, this might be what happens. Because it's so rare that people are that nice, you know?
Yeah. So it was literally the best. It worked out perfectly. I was like, thank you, universe. Thank you, people. Like, being kind goes so far. And just my happiest self. So yeah, I got home and I literally napped the rest of the day, but it was totally worth it. But I think that's why my voice is still a little rough. So, but
good. Yeah, on, no. Good you, on that. Which day did you fly back?
It was Sunday morning.
Okay, Sunday was also the end of Mercury retrograde. So that's like when transportation and communication is all whack. So the fact that this happened right when Mercury retrograde ended.
Yeah. I can't even imagine the people that showed up at the proper time, which would be 7. And they're like, wait, you were saying I was supposed to get on the 6 a.m.? That makes zero sense. Like,
how is that? Because if you're sleeping in or you didn't set your alarm, you would have missed.
No. It doesn't make any sense. How do you do that? I don't know. How could you cancel and rebook for earlier? That doesn't make any sense. But anyways, speaking of weird things, I had a DM today from someone that asked me about AI. And I was like, oh, I want to talk about that on my podcast. Because she was like, I really respect your opinion and would love to hear your thoughts and advice on how it's going to affect the business world, maybe our jobs, things like that. And she's like, I work in the entertainment industry and it's already being talked about in pretty much every conversation. So honestly, like, I'm not that concerned. The way I look at it is, back when calculators were a thing, people were saying, and not that I don't know, this is just kind of like my thought process, right? Not that I was around to know exactly what was going on, but my thought process is, everyone was like, oh, all these kids in school are going to know how to do these problems now because of the calculator, right? When computers come, you can look everything up on Google now, but it doesn't really change the fact that you still have to do things. Like, you still have to do the math problem with the calculator. You still have to research the thing with Google. So in my mind, it's just another tool that's going to help us be better. And in fact, probably create more jobs, because there's so many companies now that are using, like, companies that are creating AI products that are creating more jobs. So I think it's amazing. I'm not at all worried about AI creating someone's resume and putting me out of a job. I think it's amazing. It gives me the opportunity to find and do other things because someone can create a resume using AI. I don't know. Yeah. I was wondering what your thoughts were on, like, the travel industry, or if you've seen anything with AI stuff already.
People are talking about it in terms of travel too. One, for just like writing content. I mean, you can write an entire blog post using ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. I've done that. I don't have a blog, but I've just seeing what it can do. Like, hey, can you write me a blog post for a 10-day itinerary to Japan? And it'll populate everything you need. But the difference is, like, similarly to what you're saying, I mean, there's just, for storytelling in general, I think this is like entertainment wise and like travel and blogging, there's still going to be missing elements of like you and your personality. And that's the same thing as these ChatGPT things that are making resumes. Like, there's always like a personal touch that you're going to need to make.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it'll get so good that it can read our minds one day, but I think for me, it's been helpful. Honestly, like, you can also plug in, like, plan me a 2-week trip to Europe for less than $2,000, and it will give you all the information you need to do that. So
that's amazing.
It's scary in some ways, but I do think people are going to adjust. And like you said, it's going to end up creating more jobs, because there's going to have to be like regulations and people in the middle of it. There's going to have to be a human middleman, I think.
Right. And to answer her question, I literally do not think there's probably bad in some way, but I can't right now off the top of my head think of anything. I just really see it as a positive, and it's going to help people do things more efficiently. And even like how it can track everything that's going on in a meeting and produce those notes, so you don't have to sit there and be taking notes the whole time. Like, simple things like that, that are just making our lives easier. I'm a full on fan. Yeah. So
the only scary thing is the ones that can make photos and fake voices, and like, that kind of freaks me out, because that can be used for bad. But
yeah,
you know, that we'll just not think about that.
That is true. That is true. So before we get into the career column, I know we usually do horror stories on here. about careers. But today, one of my friends had a horror story, and just in general. And I literally texted her. I was like, can I please share this story? I won't say your name, but it is so funny. So I have to share. So I get a text this morning, like bright and early. And she's like, well, today was the most embarrassing day of my life. I left the gym, and it's like a class. So there's like a teacher and like a class gym. And she's like, I was doing the bench press, like literally, like, so you're on your back, like doing bench press. And the teacher goes, says her name and goes, you have no crotch. And she literally had no crotch to her pants, like to her like Lululemon leggings. And she, she was commando. And so the whole class, literally, she was like, the whole class saw my hoo-ha and literally like could not look anyone in the eyes. And I was like, okay, so what did you do? You just like obviously left, right? Like I would have just left, never gone back, whatever. And she was like, no, the coach gave me some shorts to throw over my leggings. And yeah, then I finished out the class.
Oh, that is not, at first I was like, wait, what?
It was a dog chewing issue. Chewed the crotch out of her leggings.
I totally have had that happen where it's like the leggings. That is so embarrassing. I would have immediately got up and canceled my membership. That gym would have never seen me again.
Right? I was like, oh my God, that is so embarrassing. But also, can I tell it on my podcast? Because it's so funny. And
I hope it was a class of all women.
Oh no, there's definitely men. She was like, the guy that was in the class could not look me in the eyes and was claiming that he didn't see anything. But like, obviously, like he had to.
Wow, that's just like very unfortunate but hilarious.
Like you're waking up so early. I think the class is like 5 a.m or something, so like you're not really even like barely alert, because I was like, how did you not feel a breeze or like anything?
Yeah, that's like, where's the crosswind didn't alert you to the situation?
Oh my God, I was dying. So now I was like, literally Ashley's texting me, I'm about to walk into the gym, and so I keep like looking down like multiple times.
Okay, that's giving me anxiety.
Yeah, I was like, I just want to make sure. Oh man. Yeah. Dog problems. Okay. Well, let's jump into our career column for the week.
How do you explain that you were laid off in an interview? If you go into an interview and you recently were laid off, you probably don't have a gap in your resume yet. So it's likely you won't have to answer this question, but it also depends on why you were laid off. So if you were laid off due to a reduction in force, then just tell the hiring team that exact reason, because that's perfectly okay. If you were laid off because you were not performing, I would leave that part out. How should I bring up burnout or other mental health issues with my manager or with my boss? This is so dependent on who you have as a manager, as a boss, and I really hope that they have an open door policy, meaning you can come to them with problems that you're having at work, because I want you to be able to be as honest as you can. If you're feeling that burnout, a lot of the times your managers want to know this before you get to that point of actually quitting. It's better to bring it up sooner than later. So what I would do, and I've actually recommended this to a friend, is ask your boss or your manager if you can have a day or two off for a mental health day and explain why. Just say, I've been working on this project nonstop and I'm feeling really burnt out and I want to be upfront and honest with you from the beginning. Can I have a day or two to kind of take some rest and time for myself away from work? Because honestly, a weekend is just not enough. So just be upfront with them and that's all you can do. If you don't have that great of a relationship with your boss or manager, I would say maybe ask for or let them know that you're going to take a sick day so they can be prepared that it's going to happen. And for you, you know, okay, I'm taking this time off. And I always just want to reiterate, if you are suffering, your mental health is suffering because of a job, nothing is worth it. So go start looking for another job as soon as you can, because it's likely not going to change if you're not able to have that conversation with your boss.
Yay, that was so good. Okay, well, thank you so much for hanging out with me, Raimi. And until next week, everybody, this is me signing off and saying, give us 5 stars, subscribe on YouTube. YouTube's pretty fun. You get to see it all and it's very good quality and amazing. We do it in a studio, all that fun stuff. So really appreciate it. Thanks for listening. I love you guys. Bye.
Thanks for listening to that Onomy podcast. Onomy is a creator-led educational platform that teaches you the things you wished you learned in school so you can thrive in adulthood. Onomy lessons are completely free and they're taught by some of your favorite creators from around the internet. Head to onomy.co to start learning about things like budgeting, investing, taxes, how to thrive in your relationships, how to find your dream job, and so much more. That's onomy.co, O-N-O-M-Y.co. See you there.